Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
I always get the Offspring and Beastie Boys sort of, I don't know what it is. It sounds a lot alike to me. Anyhow, this is Oilers Now. It's 1:34 at Edmonton. I know it's probably sacrilegious. Probably offends somebody out there. Who knows? Oilers Now, Bob Stauffer, Brendan Escott with you. Royal Pizza, Pizza Pats, so much more. Edmonton owned and operated for over 50 years for a menu of their 15 Edmonton and area locations, plus 4 in Calgary. Go online to royalpizza.ca or download the Royal Pizza app from the App Store. The Stauffer recommendation at Royal Pizza is the Mediterranean chicken. We are going to head back onto the River Cree Resort and Casino hotline, and we are pleased to hook up with Hart Levine from Puckpedia. Hello, Hart. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing? Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Yes. Well, thank you very much. Much appreciated. Hey, look, we just had Ken Holland on the show, the Oilers president of hockey operations and general manager. And it's 2 months until the season starts. I know everybody sits there and goes to websites like Puckpedia, Cap Friendly, goes, oh my God, the Oilers have no cap space. They got to do something. They got to trade somebody right now. It is 2 months away. I know you've looked at various different machinations, and you also comment upon when contracts get signed, like Yamamoto's as an example. What's your take on the options that are there for the Edmonton Oilers heading into the start of the season?
Well, yeah, I think that they can make it work without making a trade. To me, it looks like they'd have to go with a 20-player roster of healthy guys, so excluding Klefbom and Mike Smith. A 20-player roster that would give them, you know, a couple hundred grand of cap space to spare. But the challenge with that is, obviously, if somebody gets injured, you're in trouble. But also, that would include sending a guy like Sam Marukov to the minors, and he would need waivers. I'm not sure if they're willing at this point to risk him on waivers. So, you know, they don't have to make a trade. So if the prices or the deals don't make sense for them, they can make it work with a 20-man roster. But again, that means risking guys on waivers, and it means as soon as someone else gets injured and not a long-term injury, just a short-term injury, they would have no spare players. So that's not a great solution, which makes me think that a trade is more likely, but you know, again, it takes two parties to make a trade.
There's lots that can happen over the course of the next couple months. We know that. Guys can get injured in preseason, which has happened. I remember 1 year Jordan Eberle suffered a shoulder injury. That knocked him out of the lineup for about 3 weeks or 4 weeks to start the year. You know, there are some teams with a fair amount of cap space. Is there anybody currently that Arizona was signing Krause today climb finally over the floor?
Yep, they're over the floor now, yeah. So it would have been interesting because they were like just about to walk into the arbitration hearing when they settled. So, you know, a one-year deal would have been for a lower number. Interesting to see if they had gone to arbitration, had a one-year number, what kind of moves would they have made to get over the floor. But now signing them to the long-term deal, yeah, they're over the floor now. So, yeah, everyone's over the floor, but, you know, there's still that. There's a lot of teams that are pretty much completely capped out, and we still have some teams with a lot of money to spend as well. So,
how many teams are completely capped out?
Well, you have to think about who is potentially on LTIR, but, you know, like Tampa, Edmonton, Washington, depending on if Backstrom's not coming back, they have some room. If he is going to come back during the season, then they would be pretty capped out. Florida's pretty much capped out with DeClair on LTIR. Vegas having to sign some guys still look to be capped out. Vancouver is. Boston now is. We can get into them. Philadelphia, Toronto, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, New Jersey, San Jose, Rangers. Those are the teams that I'd say now
wow.
are pretty much capped out. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, some of this has to do with LTIR and that sort of thing. We had a question about the Oilers potentially acquiring another player off LTIR. Now, there's a challenge to that in the offseason, is there not?
Yeah, but I think the bigger thing is it's one of the biggest misconceptions out there is that you can just trade for an injured player and you magically get this extra cap space. It doesn't work that way. So, yeah, if they traded, let's just say we're talking Ferland in Vancouver. Yes, if they trade for him, they could add his cap hit to their LTIR pool, but they're also adding his cap hit to their cap total. So it actually provides like zero net benefit when you trade for an LTIR player. You get to go over the cap by their cap hit, but you also have added their cap hit. So you're not any further ahead. The reason why teams do that, some examples would be like Tampa trading for Seabrook, is a pretty good example, or Vegas is traded for Weber. They don't do that to like get this magic extra cap space. In those trades, they traded away a player with
right.
cap, and so they're subtracting like a player with cap, and they're bringing back an injured player that's basically like a net zero. So for Vegas, they got rid of Dadanov, they clear his cap space, and they brought back Weber, which is like a net zero. So the impact of the trade is clearing the cap space. So for the Oilers, if they just brought on a Furland, it provides no benefit. But if they moved like Fogel out in that trade, okay, then the benefit is moving out Fogel's cap hit. So again, it's one of the biggest misconceptions I get. Those questions through the Ask the Capologist on the website all the time is, can you trade for an injured player and you just get extra cap space? No, it provides like a net zero impact if you trade for an injured player.
We're joined by Hart Levine from Puckpedia. And Hart, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Fogel because there's been lots of consternation about the... Ethan Bear was a very popular player here, and the Oilers traded Bear for Fogel. The Oilers signed Fogel to a 3-year deal at $2.75 million. We know that Ethan Bear was looking to get paid. We know that. There was some people maybe in the Bear camp that they thought that he had a lot to do with the success that Darnell Nurse had during the 1920 season. It's kind of interesting what ended up happening with Ethan Bear, because my understanding was his agency not given the right to potentially shop his wares before Carolina signed him to a 1-year deal?
Yeah, I believe they were talking to teams, and I believe I think the Bear side is still open or looking to be moved. But when there's an arbitration case, you saw that with Puljujärvi. I think, still Puljujärvi's side is also probably would be open to a move, but you got to make you're going to go to arbitration, so there's going to be a contract. You might as well just, agree to it ahead of time and save the flights at the Toronto airport. So I don't think like Bear signing or Puljujärvi signing necessarily means that they're in the long-term future or they are not getting traded. I think it could still go either way. And I think having those players signed, it does give a team acquiring them a little bit more certainty. It takes away the option of maybe signing them to a longer-term deal at a number that you'd want. But, there is now certainty. You don't have to worry about an arbitration hearing getting stuck with an award you don't like. So, I'd be surprised if both of Bear and Puljujärvi are on their team, their existing teams by the first game. I'd be a little surprised just because I
really?
Think both sides were open to a move. But, there's lots of players out in the market that wanted a move, and I think you've seen the market's pretty tight right now and things are kind of locked up. So.
Well, what's interesting in Carolina's case, of course, they didn't bring D'Angelo back, but they went and made the big deal and got San Jose to bite basically a third of the money on Brent Burns. So they brought in Brent Burns. They've already got Pesci, who's a real good right shot, legitimate top four guy. And then they, they took the salary dump from the Vegas Golden Knights with Pacioretty and Coughlin. And there's a lot of guys in the league that like Coughlin. And they also have Chatfield, Jalen Chatfield, who's with the Canucks. So they've got five right shot defensemen right now. Burns and Pesci are going to play in their top four. Bear, Coughlin, and Chatfield. So I could totally. So you think it's a possibility that both Bear and Puljujärvi, despite the fact that they got their deals, a 1-year deal settled that didn't require either guy to go to arbitration, you could see both of those guys being moved before the start of the season?
I could see both. I could see one, and I could see neither. But I think the preference, or I don't know. I think from what we've heard, it sounds like both would be open to a move, and so if you got two, you're flipping the coin twice. I think there's a chance that one of them move, but that's the two of I don't know how many guys out there that I think would be interested in a move. It just this off season especially seems like things are pretty locked up. So just because a player wants to move, maybe even the team wants to move him, doesn't mean that you're able to make that happen. So, two guys that probably want to move, and now they're on 1-year deals with some cost certainty. I think it's quite possible one or both are moved before.
It's interesting. They still have Natchez, right? Restricted free agent.
Yep.
Love him. Absolutely love him. And I'm sure they're not trading him, but that's going to be an interesting one to watch. So, circling back to Edmonton. So, the bottom line is they could, theoretically, if they get McLeod done, let's just say it's 1 year at $900,000 for the sake of argument. If they get him done, they could come in under the cap at the start of the season with 12-6-2, but they would end up potentially exposing a guy like Sam Marukov.
Exactly, yeah. You know, I've seen some potential rosters out there where they don't include, like, a Holloway, for example, in the opening roster. Yeah. Now, the challenge with that is, like, the Oilers need to have basically anyone with performance bonuses that they expect to be on the team this year, because they're going to be so tight to the cap, they really need them in that opening roster submission, because the amount of performance bonuses that are included in the opening roster submission, those go into an LTIR performance bonus pool. And and if you call up someone and you don't have room in that pool, it comes out of your cap space. So, for example, if Holloway wasn't in the opening roster submission, and then they wanted to call him up later in the year, then instead of a $925,000 cap hit, he's a $1.44 million cap hit when you look at the performance bonuses. And again, considering how tight they're going to be, that seems pretty unlikely. And, you know, what the worst case for them would be, actually what happened last year, is if Holloway gets hurt sometime before training camp, before the first game, because he didn't play any regular season games last year, he would be on injured reserve but had no cap hit, and so they wouldn't get his performance bonuses in that pool. And then they have no choice. If they want to play him at some point in the year, he's at $1.4 million cap hit. So that would be the one injury that they really can't would really put a wrench in their plans. If he was somehow injured and not able to be included on the opening roster, that would be a challenge. But any kind of other things, like sending Broberg down for the opening roster and having a cheaper guy on the opening roster, it just doesn't really work, because you need his performance bonuses in that separate pool on that opening roster submission, or it's going to come back and he's going to cost a lot more on your cap during the season.
Well, I don't know if you heard Ken Holland, but he basically just said, you know, Broberg's, well, he's basically got to play his way off the team in training camp and in the preseason. And in Holloway's case, we got the sense that he's got to play his way onto the team. That's going to be interesting to watch.
I was just going to say, and along those lines, though, I think if they had, like, more cap space, they would want to include a guy even like Borgo just for the opening roster submission, so they could get his performance bonuses in the pool. Because without that, he's going to count $925,000, but if they don't have him on the opening roster and they were to call him up while they had Holloway on, now he's going to count as $1.17 million. So, again, I don't think that's going to be an option unless they make a trade. But, you know, if they do free up some space, that would be a move you'd want to see from a
standpoint of
having a guy like him on the opening roster.
Hart, how different is this going to be for the Oilers organization next year? Because, you know, we know that Smith's going to be on LTI, and it's the final year of Klefbom being on LTIR. They're both going to be off the books, assuming they don't have anybody else on LTIR. And, oh, by the way, Sekera and Lucic's money, $1.5 million last year, the four-year buyout on Sekera. Last year, the $750,000 retained on Lucic. It's going to be a different offseason for Edmonton next year. It'll be much easier, actually, to figure out where the Oilers are at, won't it?
Well, it makes a big difference. I think not being an LTIR team potentially next year opens up the option of that that they would go into the season with the roster expecting to add during the season, because they would actually be able to accrue cap space. So,
right.
You know, just rough math, if you start the season with $1 million of cap space and you don't kind of change the roster during the season, by the trade deadline, you can add a $4.5 million cap hit player. Whereas when you're in LTIR, you have $1 million to start the year, you can only add $1 million at the deadline. So you might see next offseason, if they have a hole or they maybe need some depth somewhere, there's not as much of an urgency to address it in the summer, knowing that you can accrue some space during the season and potentially be able to bring on that cap hit during the year. That's one point. But the other side of it is, this year as an LTIR team and with guys like Bouchard, probably earning performance bonuses, and maybe a Broberg or a Holloway, depending on how their seasons go, that's going to be a performance bonus carryover for next year, and that's going to eat into some of that space that's opening up by, you know, like you mentioned, Sekera's buyout or Lucic's retained salary. So they're going to lose a little bit of that, but it'll carry over into next year. But, yeah, definitely it changes things when you're not an LTIR team, and it's nice to have some of that dead cap hit off the books. Like this year, they've got – you know, the $4.17 million in the buyouts and retained salary, another $900,000 in bonus, carryover bonuses. So, you know, they have $5 million in dead cap hit to start the season. That's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, the Boston Bruins made some noise today. They didn't just bring back Patrice Bergeron, but they brought back David Krejci, who played last year in the Czech and Czechia. And it's interesting because I'm not convinced either guy comes back if Bruce Cassidy's still in Boston. Explain to the listeners how those two deals work since they're both 35 years of age plus.
Yeah, so they signed, they're both 35 years or older, so they're eligible to sign a deal, a one-year deal with performance bonuses if they want, and that's what they did. In Bergeron's case, he gets $2.5 million just for hitting 10 games, so it's clearly just, you know, they're counting on him getting that. And, yeah, the way that it works is those performance bonuses do not count against the cap during the season, so they're only, so Bergeron is a $2.5 million cap hit during the season. And then at the end of the season, you take the team's final cap hit, you add in all the bonuses that were earned, so you assume Bergeron's $2.5 million. And however much that new total is over the $82.5 million cap, that's going to be the carryover overage cap hit for next season. So we just talked about that with the Oilers. So like last year, Bouchard hit his bonuses and McLeod, that they were over the cap because they used LTIR. That was all an overage. For Boston, you know, let's just say they look to be over the cap now, but let's say they were able to stay under the cap by a little bit. Well, still, most of those bonuses that are earned are going to be a carryover for next year. So it's a way of pushing bonuses from kind of the current year, or pushing cap hit from the current year into the next year. If a team is going to be really good and they're going for it, that makes sense. If you're like out of the playoffs like Vancouver and they had with Halak, his bonuses now from that year and last year are a big $1.25 million hit this year. It's like not necessarily a great set strategy. I could see that being really used the year where we think the salary cap is going to jump a lot, right? Where the cap space in that year will be worth way more than the following year. And you could see like a lot of guys that are eligible for performance bonuses signing those kind of deals because the teams would be more comfortable with the carryover hitting the next year. But yeah, Boston, they're definitely a team that's structuring these deals to maximize what they can do this year, and there's going to be some pain and dead cap hit for next year as a result.
Yeah, well, Pasternak's deal's up at 6.7 next year. He's a UFA at the end of the season. Foligno at 3.8. Zacha signing the one-year deal at 3.5. He's a UFA now. They'll likely get him done again. Smith at 3.1, who's 32. Bergeron's 37 at 2.5 base. Noshik's 29, a replaceable player at 1.75. And then Krejci at 36 at 1 million. Like, they got like $25 million in expiring just at forward. So they'll be able to work that all in. Very quickly, a quick rip on the Vegas Golden Knights and what's going on there. I know that you mentioned they acquired in the offseason Shea Weber. They also basically salary dumped Max Pacioretty. Don't forget what they gave up to get Pacioretty in the first place, but Pacioretty and Coughlin to the Carolina Hurricanes and basically got nothing back. Where are we at right now with Vegas and the situation they're in?
Yeah, so Vegas right now projects to be $3.6 million over the cap with 20 guys. And with Weber, they can exceed the cap by about $7.86 million. So they've got about $4.3 million of space they can use right now. But they have Nick Waugh that needs to be signed. There's been a lot of talk out there that that's probably going to be around a $3 million cap hit on a long-term deal. They got to sign Nick Hague, and it's been pretty quiet, I think, on that front. And, you know, some depth guys like Precision. So, you know, I think they'd have to really squeeze a guy like Hague on a one-year deal to make that all fit. Otherwise, there's probably another move coming, or similarly, they're going to be trying to go with like a 20-man roster to make it fit, which they've done in the past, and they've been in a situation where then they even have to play short a player for a game because they don't have the cap space. And that's now many years of Vegas doing that. So maybe they're fine kind of living in that danger area. But, you know, it's just like with the Oilers, you could kind of make it work, but another trade would ease a little bit of the pain or the struggle during the season. And the other thing is, you know, like a guy like Hague, for example, not signed, eligible for
offer sheet.
Yeah, and it's not like it's that expensive, but if they offer, if he received an offer sheet, you know, in the high twos, $3 million range, Vegas is gonna would have to make some kind of a move to make it all fit for sure. Then, and you really force their hand. So, you know, again, maybe if there was ever a team to receive it, we know that Vegas isn't necessarily the favorite of all the other teams. So maybe they're the team to get it. But yeah, that's definitely an area to watch for sure. And I think like Vegas is a team I've heard like they have some deals kind of done, but they're waiting to paper them.
Interesting.
And in part to protect themselves against an offer sheet, right? So they actually have some flexibility if they receive one or a threat of one to make some things work.
Awesome stuff, Hart. How do people follow you?
Follow on Twitter at Puckpedia and check out the website, puckpedia.com.
All right, excellent. That is Hart Levine from Puckpedia, 153 in Edmonton. And we're going to head into the Stan Oilers history. It's brought to you all season long by New West Travel. Here's Brendan Escott.
Oh, fumbling through his papers so that he can tell you in 2013, the Oilers re-upped with 2012's third-round pick, Jujhar Khera, three-year, not re-up, they signed him to his entry-level deal at this day. It was worth $2.775 million. Surrey BC product had just come off 25-point season at Michigan Tech and then scored 43 points in 59 games with the Everett Silvertips, made his pro debut with OKC with the Barons in that same year.
All right, a little bit of news on the music front. Somebody who did not appear at Woodstock 99, in fact, was probably the antithesis of the shows that were there. Olivia Newton-John, and we're going to have more coming up here at 2 o'clock with Eileen Bell, but Olivia Newton-John has passed away at the age of 73 years of age. Reed Wilkins has Inside Sports tonight. What's he got shaking, Brendan Escott?
A lot of stuff, including an episode of Elks This Week, hosted by Morley Scott. That's at 7:30, but first you'll hear from Elks assistant general manager G. Roy Simon and the goaltender for Canada's U18 team, Holinka Gretzky Cup gold medalist Scott Ratzlaff, who I believe is from Irma, Alberta. So, oh, Rob Brown, too.
There you go. Irma, that is, I think Ratzlaff, if I heard correctly, is related to Carson Soucy. In fact, I think Carson Soucy's dad was a goaltender back in the day. Sportsnet's Mark Spector will join us tomorrow for the horses and horse racing in Alberta. A reminder, the Western Canada's biggest day of racing is the 93rd running of the Canadian Derby, Saturday, August 20th at Century Mile. Tickets available now. We will head off to a global news weather traffic update with Eileen, followed by Rob Breckenridge from 2 to 3. And then 6:30 Chet Afternoons with guest host Ted Henley. We opened today talking about Woodstock 99. Is this the song that closed Woodstock 99 back in the day, Brendan?
No, but I think it's the... Actually, it is. And if it isn't, it's certainly the song that closed out the 90s.
So long, everybody. Back at you tomorrow with Spec.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.